One of the things that happens, I guess, in the preparation to become a deacon is that we are warned from time to time that you're going to have to preach on very little notice. The worst time that it happened to me was when I was in Jamaica. We were on a mission trip, and I went to, I preached the gospel, and I went to sit back down, and I looked over at the priest, and he just smiled. And so I had to preach, totally unprepared. This is one of those moments where I'm not totally unprepared, but I got a phone call last night from Father Sonny because his back has been feeling rather bad of late, and we need to pray for him because he's looking at a bunch of different options now to undergo, and he has a herniated disc. For those of you who know what that is, it's rather painful. So I got the message while I was at a wedding that I was doing last night, and I called him back at about 10:30. He was already in bed. And I called him back and said, "No worries, I got this." My wife was very funny. She said, "Well, we'll just stop by the office on the way home. I'm sure you've preached this Sunday before, and we'll just go pull one of your old ones." So at about 10:45 last night, we were there in my office on the way home from the wedding, and I typed into my homily bank and pull up the 10th Sunday of Ordinary Time, Cycle C, and there's a blank. So this is either going to be one of those very long homilies, because, as you know, I get paid by the word in my day job, or this will be one of those very short homilies, and hopefully it'll be to the point. Eric's going to take notes, and he'll make sure that I'm on track. There's a common theme that runs through all of our readings today. It's enunciated first in the first reading and brought out more clearly in the gospel reading, and that is the raising of a son to life. And we hear in the gospel reading in particular a little more detail from Luke as he talks about this being the only son of a widow. And as you know, in Jewish custom during that time, widows were taken care of by their sons. And if the sons, they had no sons, then the community would take care of them. So here's this woman, absolutely distraught, a widow, now losing her only son. And in pops Jesus into the scene, right? He's coming into the city. The procession has already gone out, and if those of you who have seen processions that take place in funerals in the Middle East, oh, there's professional mourners everywhere. They're screaming, and they're wailing, and they're grinding teeth. They're doing all sorts of things, and they lead the procession. It's like going down New Orleans, where you see all sorts of folks just going crazy during funeral processions. We don't have that in Lilburn, thank God. All right? But in Jewish times, that was very common. You would take them outside the city because the dead were not supposed to be kept there. They were supposed to be buried outside of the city limits. And in comes Jesus with his crowd. And notice what happens. Jesus is moved to pity. Why? Okay? Why is he moved to pity? What is he envisioning as he's seeing this? Is he envisioning the fact that he knows that Joseph, his foster father, has already gone before, and he knows what his mother is going to suffer in the future, right? She's a widow, and he is the only son. So is he moved to pity? Is he moved to tears like he was with Lazarus? Is he completely moved that he said, "I've got to do something for this woman"? And he goes up to the coffin. Now, they didn't probably carry boxes like we do now, coffin boxes, but he was probably in a shroud on a pallet of some sort being carried outside the city. And notice Jesus doesn't touch the body, because if you touch the body, then there's all sorts of problems. He would be defiled, and he would not be allowed to go into the city. But he touches the pallet, and he says, "Arise." And immediately, the son gets up. And we don't hear the words of the mother afterward, but we can only imagine that she was just so elated that life not only came back to her son, but her spiritual life. Her life had been restored within her by that simple act of Jesus touching the pallet and saying, "Arise." We see that also in the first reading, where Elijah comes forward and he then takes the dead son upstairs, says words over him and prays and says, "Oh Lord, just do something. You can't, this widow is taking care of me, and you can't allow this child to die in my presence." And he prays over the son, and the son arises, and he, in both times, we hear, and he gives the son back to the mother. But the difference between Elijah being a great prophet and Jesus being the Son of God is that Elijah was only able to restore life, physical life, but he could not restore the spiritual life that Jesus was able to restore in this woman. And so her spirituality grew. All right? Take that now into the second reading, where we see this great persecutor of the faith, Paul, who was, for all practical purposes, was spiritually dead because he lived the letter of the Jewish law, and he was the great sacred bondholder. He was the one who was going to absolutely make sure that all Jewish traditions kept forward, and we were going to get rid of all of these Christians. Paul was spiritually dead. And we know Paul's story, right? He was blinded on the road to Damascus. He heard Jesus say, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" And he raises Paul to new life, to a new spiritual life. And we hear Paul today so grateful for that new spiritual life that he says, "Before I was even formed in my mother's womb, the graces of God were working within me." And Paul then became that great leader, that went out to all the Gentile nations to proclaim the graces and the good news of God, giving us new spiritual life, new spiritual awakening. And isn't that what we all need in these times? Don't we need a Paul to come and knock us off our high horse to say, "Get with Jesus. Know that Jesus is the Son of God. Know that he is the one that restores us all to spiritual life." And how does he do that? How does he make us those instruments of compassion, those instruments of mercy, those instruments to bring the good news to all peoples? He does so by giving us the church, giving us the sacraments, giving us the ability to seek God's mercy and to become those compassionate people each time we go and receive the sacrament of reconciliation. Now, I dare say, and I won't put anybody to the test, but for some sitting here today, it has been a long time since you have been spiritually cleansed, since you have received the sacrament of reconciliation. I love serving the sacrament of confirmation with Archbishop Gregory because he loves to terrorize the kids. He loves to ask them all these questions, and from time to time he will go forward, and as they come forward to him, he'll ask them why they chose their saint name. He'll let them ask him a question, and then he goes through and he says, "List the sacraments you already have received." Now the kids are, "All right, I think I was baptized. I know I received communion, and I'm receiving confirmation." He says, "Not yet, you haven't." And then the kids are puzzled. And he said, "What about reconciliation?" "Oh, yeah, reconciliation." And the archbishop comes back and says, "Lots of Catholics forget the sacrament of reconciliation." No laughter today. Usually that's a great deal of laughter at the sacrament of confirmation. But as you're sitting here today, when's the last time that you felt the Lord's compassion? When's the last time you felt his mercy? When is the last time that you were agents of his compassion? When were you agents of his mercy? How are we going to continue in our journey to be those disciples that he calls us to be, to help with the spiritual awakening of those around us who are in so much desperate need of that new life? That's what we are called to do. As my former pastor, Father John, would say, that is our mission. And it's true. It is our mission. Our mission is to bring the good news of Jesus Christ to everyone we come in contact with. It doesn't matter whether, what color they are, what age they are, what religion they are. It matters not. But it matters that we are those agents chosen by Christ, just like St. Paul was in the womb of our mothers, to be his agents. Go forth and avail yourself of that opportunity. God bless you.